Now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Bree from San Diego.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bree. I'm an alcoholic. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for letting me be here, for letting me be a part of your sobriety tonight, and thank you for helping to keep me sober. I know that being of service is a, like Kelly was sharing, being of service is so important to my sobriety. And so anytime I'm asked to do something for Alcoholics Anonymous that I can do, I do it. I'm not always happy about it, but I do it. I am happy to be here tonight. There's so many of you that have come from Mira Mesa, it's not that far down the road, but there's so many of you that are here to support me tonight and that love me and that are my friends, my sponsor, my sponsees, my fiancé. All I really wanted as a child and growing up was to feel loved and accepted and one of the group, and I didn't feel that way. And now I have that. It's one of the most beautiful things that I've gotten from Alcoholics Anonymous is that I can stand up here, look around a room, look you all in the eye, and know that it's my job for the next 45 minutes to bare my soul to you, and that I'm completely comfortable doing that. You know, I can't do it wrong. Several people have asked me tonight if I'm nervous, and I'm here with my family sharing my spirit with you. And if that somehow helps you tonight, that's wonderful. I know it's going to help me. I know that when I walk out of here tonight, I will feel good. I'll feel whole and happy and satisfied that I've done what I'm supposed to do today. I'll share with you, of course, you know, my experience, strength, and hope. I don't have one of these fantastic, crazy stories full of drama. I got sober when I was 16 years old. My sobriety date is July 15th, 1989, and I've been sober for 19 and a half years. You can, if you're here and you're young, you can get sober with a whole lot of yets. You don't have to go to jail. You don't have to lose your car. You don't have to lose your family. What you need, if you're like me, what I needed was to know that I was an alcoholic, that I had this disease. This disease didn't care how old I was. It didn't care that I came from a nice family. I have parents that are still married. I love my family. My family is wonderful. Some of them are a little fruity, but they're really wonderful people. And I didn't have some tragic childhood. I had a lot of feelings that weren't in proportion to what reality was. I had a lot of insecurity and a lot of fear and a lot of wanting to be anyone but me and wanting to feel anything except for what I was feeling. And there wasn't really a cause for that. I'll share a little bit about when I was growing up, my family, they loved to drink. And most of them are normal drinkers. It was fun when they drank. They'd all get together at my grandparents' house, and Grandpa would have his martini, and my mom would have a red wine, and my dad would have his scotch, and my Uncle Bob would have everything. And I was allowed to drink a little of everyone's drink. And there was laughter, and there was fun, and it was warm. And I remember my first drink when I was 4 or 5 years old. My dad had a big bottle of Burgundy that was always on the counter, and he had little wine glasses, and I thought those little wine glasses were for children. And I think my father probably told me that, because that was my little wine glass. And I had that drink, and it just, you know, you shouldn't have much anxiety when you're 4 or 5 years old. I didn't know that I had much. I didn't know how much I had until it was relieved by that Burgundy, that feeling. And I remembered that. So when I was in middle school and I wasn't fitting in and I wasn't belonging, I was a straight-A student and I was in church and I was a goody-two-shoes and I got picked on and I was the one that they were going to beat up after school almost every day. I hated that. So when some of these girls offered me a drink out in the football field, yeah, that'll work. And it felt good, and I felt accepted. And for a moment, I had that acceptance that I'd always wanted. I grabbed onto that wholeheartedly. And at that time in my life, 12, 13 years old, we made a move. I was born in the Bay Area in San Leandro. We moved just a little way south down to Santa Maria. And for me, it was a fresh start. I was just turning 13 years old, and I had discovered, you know, alcohol had always been a nice thing. I discovered what it could do for me socially. And I made a conscious decision that I was going to do everything I could to fit in and have a good time, and I don't care about grades, and I don't care about school, I don't care about what my parents want me to do. I need to fit in. I want to have some fun. And I did. You know, I was really good at drinking. 13 years old, I could outdrink most of the guys, the older guys I was drinking with. And they cheered me on. You know, they didn't think I was so much fun when I would, you know, drink the Jack Daniels and then throw up. And they didn't think I was so much fun. I remember being going to parties and drinking with everyone and being the one that they would not put back in the car. I was allowed, they would take me like in the back of the truck and drive me home or to someone else's home and just kind of let me go on the lawn and hope that I was okay. Even though I was hanging out with people that were some my age, some a lot older, they were drinking heavy, I still had this inability to even fit in with them. You know, I drank when I didn't want to drink, and I would try to stop, and, I can't say that I loved being drunk, because I don't like that feeling of being out of control and throwing up and dizzy. I don't like that. But that was better than what I felt when I was sober. So that worked. I'd take it. I only drank for about three and a half years. The first year of that, I didn't know about alcoholism. I didn't know about AA. And I just drank as much as I could, as often as I could. I got kicked out of school. I got, in trouble with the law. I got in trouble with my parents. Everything that we do when we're drinking. But I had a counselor at school when I got to high school. She was in AA, and she was a psychologist, and she did so much good to help the teenagers at my school that were alcoholic and drug addicts. She sent me to AA meetings. She would excuse me from lunch and fifth period and send me to AA. I went to my first meeting when I was about 15, and I sat there just, we could smoke back then. And I was happy that I was a kid, but I was allowed to sit with the grown-ups and smoke and drink coffee and kind of act like a grown-up. And nobody sent me away. Nobody really asked why I was there. They just said hi and welcome. And you were a strange group. At the head of the table, there was this guy who was this big biker guy and this other big Mexican guy. And there were these little old people in the meeting, like grandma and grandpa in AA. And I couldn't get the mix of people. It was just strange. But you accepted me, and you let me be there. I don't remember much of what I heard at that first meeting. I know that it was better to be in meetings than it was to be at school. So I went off and on. What Alcoholics Anonymous did is just absolutely ruined my drinking. Something sank in, because I heard that this is a disease, and I heard that if you can't control your drinking, you might have a problem. And I could no longer just drink and not care and not know. Every time I drank, I felt like maybe there's something wrong. Maybe this isn't normal. Even though the crowd that I hung out with drank, they drank and they partied, I had that nagging, gnawing feeling that something wasn't right. I spent the next couple of years trying to do both. I wanted to be sober, because when I was sober, everybody was happy with me. My parents were happy, and the school was happy, and everybody just thought it was great. And I wanted to drink. I wanted to be with my drinking friends. And I wanted more than anything to prove that I was not an alcoholic. So I would stay sober for a couple of weeks or a couple of months. And cool, I'm sober. If I can stay sober, that means now I can drink like I want to. And so I would drink. And it would start out okay, and then it would spiral, and it would get out of control. And so I would stay sober again, and then I would drink. I stayed sober most of a six-month period so that I could go to a continuation school, did 2.5 years worth of high school in 6 months, got straight A's, graduated, and thought, I did it. I arrived. I did what I'm supposed to do. Now I can drink. And it only took a couple of months after that to really hit bottom. And what happened in that last couple of months was that I became physically addicted to alcohol. I could not get through a night without drinking. I would wake up and I would need to drink, and I was hiding bottles. I was hanging out with a bunch of people that were all partying, but I had to make sure that I had my alcohol. I kept not running away from home. My parents, God bless them, they had no idea what to do with me. I didn't have to run away from home. I would tell them that I was leaving, and they would say, okay, you can always come home when you want to come home. And I did. I called them from Reno. I called them from on my Bakersfield. I called them from, I don't remember how many places I called them from. But my drinking just was so out of control, and I was trying one more time to just go somewhere. I just want to go anywhere. And I found a guy, and we headed to up the coast, stopped at, partied along the way with anybody that we knew along the way. I have family up in the Bay Area, and he had family, and no matter where I ran to, I was there every time. I couldn't get away from my head. I couldn't get away from just those feelings of just such disgust with who I was and what I was doing. Feeling out of control. I knew I'm only 16 years old and I'm this screwed up. What's the rest of my life going to be like? The idea of having to have a normal life, have a normal job, just do what people are supposed to do. I felt like I was never going to be able to do that. There's no way I'm ever going to be able to just get up in the morning and go to a job and come home. And how do people do that? How do they feel happy in their own skin? I just didn't have it. I'd been in and out of the program a long time, and I'd been saying I was sober when I wasn't, taking chips, just because, time goes by and people expect you to do that when you're going to meetings. So I had a sponsor that expected me to do that. We didn't work any steps together, but, I told her I was sober, and I hadn't been to meetings for a little while, and somebody tricked me and asked me, hey, why don't you come to the meeting and we'll go out? And so I showed up at the meeting, and he stood me up, but somebody else was there who said, how are you? And, fine. And he said, you should have about a year by now, right? Aren't you coming up on a birthday? And for some reason, the truth came out of my mouth, which didn't happen very often. But I told him, I'm only sober today because I haven't found anything yet. And he said, that's okay. Why don't you just stay for the meeting? So I stayed for the meeting. And 4 days later, I realized that I'd still been just staying for the meeting, that I'd been sober 4 days. And it just struck me, okay, maybe I can do this again. And then the pink cloud came, and that first 30 days, I took a 30-day chip. That's how I told my sponsor I'd gone back out drinking. I just got up and took a 30-day chip when she thought I'd been sober almost a year. Look, I got 30 days. And I accidentally told my parents I was sober again. I had friends over for dinner. And I love having AA parties. I always have. I had friends over for dinner, and I made this huge meal. And something was said like, oh, she's a pretty good cook for only being 30 days sober. And my parents went, what? So I let them know finally, yeah, sober again. But that pink cloud did hit. And the family was happy with me again, and I was doing what I was supposed to be doing again, and I, working and doing whatever it is that I'm expected to do so that you will like me. I'm really good at that. I'll do whatever it is you want me to do so that you will like me. But that pink cloud didn't last very long. When I'm sober without the 12 steps, I have all these feelings, and they're not very comfortable. That was a problem with me trying to get sober over and over again. I would get sober, and then I would have feelings. And I would feel inadequate. And one of the biggest inadequacies I felt was that I'd been raised in the church, and I'd been taught what God expected of me and knew that I was absolutely incapable of doing that. There's no way that I can do what this God wants from me. and I've been told I'm not worthy, and I've been told I have to, when I sin, ask for forgiveness, and then everything will be okay. And, you know, I would ask for forgiveness, and everything would be okay. I'd been asking for forgiveness over and over and over and over again, and nothing was ever okay. So I kind of given up on this God thing, you know. I'm never going to make God happy, so why try? But that came with a lot of guilt and a lot of fear and a lot of shame. And I just kept wondering how I was ever going to be sober and be happy about it. I was a few months sober, and I went to a meeting to complain and whine. Love that. And I was complaining and whining, and a couple of people who didn't have much more time than I had, but they had the steps, they pulled me aside after the meeting, and they talked to me, and they said, you know, your problem is not him, and your problem is not her, your problem is you, and if you're ready to do something about it, we will help you. And what they did was took me to a coffee shop, and we sat down, and we started going through that big book, and we read through the doctor's opinion, and I saw, you know, restless, irritable, and discontent until we can again have that ease and comfort of a drink. Like, whoa, I understand that. I get that. And they talked to me about, you know, the allergy to alcohol. And it finally made sense to me. Once I would start to drink, I couldn't control how much I was going to drink. Sometimes, you know, I could do that. I'm going to have half a beer. And, you know, try to just control. But it doesn't last. You know, you can control for so long, or I could control if I knew that, you know, if I do this right now, then later I can drink like I want to. We have incredibly strong wills. We're incredibly willed people. So I finally understood that allergy. You know, I don't drink like normal people drink. When I see my father drink a little bit, he has like half a beer, and he gets a little loose. And he gets a little silly, and he's fun, and his face gets a little flushed. And then he quits, and he drinks, like, water. I don't do that. I just don't. I watched my dad drink over the holidays. He had a little thing of scotch, and it took him all night to drink it, and he just got a little silly, and then he quit. And I love watching my dad drink. Amuses me. But he doesn't have the allergy to alcohol. I do. And I saw that. I understood that. The other thing I learned that night was about the obsession. You know, if you have an allergy, but you're never exposed to what it is you're allergic to, then you don't have an allergic reaction. Well, I've got this crazy thing in my head that says, drinking sounds good. Now, maybe I just woke up with who knows where, but because I was drunk and I didn't know what I was doing, but my first thought is, a drink will make me feel better. It's completely backwards thinking, but I would assume for about 99% of us in the room, it makes absolute sense. You know, the best thing for me to do when I don't feel good is, you know, hair the dog. I've got to drink some more. And that I came to understand it wasn't always a conscious thing. You know, there were times when I just went out to get drunk, but there were a lot of times when I wanted to stay sober. I wasn't really thinking about drinking, but somehow found myself drunk anyway and really didn't understand why. But the book really explained that. As we read through that night, we went through Bill's story, and I've been looking for so long at the differences, which is really easy to do because I was 15, 16 years old. And, you know, I had some old-timers tell me, you know, I spilled more than you drank, and if you didn't spill so much, you'd have gotten here sooner. It was really easy for me to look at the differences, and I'd heard Bill's story before, and Bill was nothing like me. He was a stockbroker from New York in the 30s. He, you know, was married to Lois. What do I have in common with this guy? He was a salesman. He was a... I didn't think that Bill and I had anything in common, but I found out going through that story that we did. You know, he wanted to stop drinking and couldn't. He even learned some about alcoholism from from Dr. Silkworth, and he thought, you know, I got it. I know. I've got, this is the answer. Just like me in AA, you guys have been telling me about alcoholism for a couple of years. I had all this knowledge about alcoholism, but that knowledge did not give me the power that I needed to stay sober. So I identified with Bill that night. I'm like, I felt like he felt. I drank like he drank. And he found something that worked for him. And all these other people in AA found something that worked for them. That night, the light bulb went on. It was like, oh, I'm an alcoholic. Just suddenly, after 2.5, 3 years in meetings saying I was an alcoholic, it sank. I knew what it meant to be powerless, to have my life unmanageable. And I became willing to do whatever I had to do to get what you guys had. I told you a little bit about the God that I had at that time, and it was a very punishing God, and I was really, really afraid of God. That night, I was desperate enough to just surrender everything I thought I knew. Everything that I know, somebody told me, and people can be wrong. No matter how much you might think you're right, you could all be wrong. And that's okay, which means I can be wrong, which means I can start from scratch. And whatever it is, whatever this higher power is, it's helped you, and I know if I do what you did, it'll help me. I was able at that point to get a real sponsor, not just somebody who was in the program and nuttier than me. Yeah, that's fun to do. You know, if you're new and you don't really want to work this thing, you just kind of want to hang out, find a sponsor, somebody who's crazier than you, and see what kind of adventures you can have. It's not real good for your sobriety, but you might have a good time for a little while. My first sponsor took me to Reno, but she left me there. So the good news is she got sober again. She stayed sober. I stayed sober. We were just insane. Drama is another thing. Drama and chaos can be just as addicting as alcohol. That beginning of my real sobriety, I got a sponsor. I started going to a book study. I started working the steps from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We went through that book together, page by page, line by line, together. And when the book says to do something, you do it. It's really, really simple. It's not emotionally easy, but it's really pretty simple. I learned what it was like doing my steps to start to feel kind of accepted. When I did my inventory and I shared with my sponsor the first time, you know, those secrets, those things I had so much guilt and shame about, I told her those things, and they were no big deal. You know, I had two fears going into my fifth step. One was that, you know, what is she going to think of me when I share with her these horrible things? And the other was, what if this isn't good enough and I'm not really an alcoholic and she tells me I don't get to stay? And I found out that I did qualify, but that my story was not that exciting. I told her my deepest, darkest secret, the thing I was most shameful about. She went, oh, is that all? Let me tell you. And she told me a story. And I just thought, wow. You know? And what was great is that a year or two later, I was in a meeting, and I heard someone share in an open meeting the exact same thing that I had done that I was so humiliated about, and they shared it in an open meeting, and I went, oh, okay. It's not, you know, we're so grandiose in our heads. Yeah. As I worked through the steps, I started to feel this lightness. Like, you know, it wasn't no lightning bolts, no, like, grand. I didn't, like, do my third step and have, you know, light come down and God say, hi, welcome. But I started to feel this relief. And as I went through 6 and 7, and I had all these character defects, and some of them I was willing to get rid of, and some of them I wasn't willing to get rid of, they would crop up, and they would be uncomfortable, and I'd become even more willing to let go of them, and this fear started to leave. I didn't know how much I was just consumed by fear until the fear started to go away, and I was no longer afraid. By about 2 years sober, and the second time through my steps, I was just like hungry for anything spiritual, anything I could read, anything, you know, beyond the program. And I'd go to the library and just see what books would kind of fall off the shelf at me, and I would read everything. And I wrote. I've kept a journal since I was 11. And I love to write, so anybody I sponsor knows. Have you written about that? It's a wonderful tool for me to write. But at this time in my sobriety, I was standing in the shower of all places and just had this thought of, you don't have to be afraid of God. And, you know, it wasn't a booming voice. It was just the little one in my head, but it was kind of calm. And I realized I'm no longer afraid of God. You know, and from that moment, things really opened up. I was able to I had a good friend who's been sober 25 or 30 years. We call him Hippie Bob. And he's been really instrumental in my sobriety. And I went to him and I told him, Bob, I'm not afraid of God anymore. I can say that God is a big blue bunny rabbit and I'm not going to get struck down. And he was like, yeah, you know, he's like, now you're kind of ready for some new things, for some new growth. And my journey really, really started then. I learned how to meditate, which I thought was some, you know, weird thing. It was just learning how to be calm, learning how to be still, learning how to listen. And I learned how to pray, which for me, my prayer is really, it's writing. It's conversation. I've spent a lot more time sober than I spent drinking, and I've spent more of my life in Alcoholics Anonymous than out of it. So this is really all that I know. I've been through so much life sober that I really don't have a fear of anything coming down the road anymore. I'll share with you a little bit about some of the things I've gone through. I was 16 when I got sober, and got through high school before I got sober. Went to college. My first semester of college was awful, and I dropped out. But I stayed sober. And the next year, another semester of college, got kicked out, but I stayed sober. And just couldn't complete anything. So my solution by the time I was 20 and not able to do anything successfully was to have a baby. Made sense at the time. And I'd been in a relationship for about a year and a half with somebody who was brand new sober the day we met and got together. And at 20 and 4 years sober, I got pregnant with my son. And as crazy as it sounds, it was probably the best thing I could have done. I suddenly had this child, and it gave me this purpose. For the first time in my life, a feeling of purpose. I know what I'm supposed to do, and I'm pretty sure I'm capable of doing it. And so I had this little boy who's 15 years old now. And, you know, I did okay being a mom. I was pretty good at it. And I did okay finally having a job, taking care of myself, having my own apartment, learning how to be a grown-up. I had the idea of the, you know, you're supposed to be married and have the family thing, so I wanted that. And I, once again, in AA, I found someone. My son's father ended up drinking. He drank before my son was ever born and left. By 22, I got married. By 23, I had my daughter. I also had a stepdaughter who's 10 years younger than I am, and one of us. And so I went through a lot in my beginning of my sobriety, the first 10 years or so, learning how to be an adult, learning how to be a mother, learning how to be mother to a teenager who is a drug addict who wants to kill herself and me, a lot. And then I learned how to stay sober and get divorced. You know, I learned how to stay sober and go to school and complete school. I went back to school. I've learned how to be sober and be happy about it. That's a good thing. Sometimes I really wish I had like just one really good story, one really exciting. And then we went here. But my journey through my sobriety has just been some of it's been slow and painful, but it's also been steady and wonderful. I've learned since I've been here that there's nothing better than answering the phone and having it be a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous who is just calling me to say, hello, I'm thinking about you. That's a very wonderful thing. Yeah. And something else I've learned here that's very wonderful is that I can do that for someone else. You know, the other side of that, I can give you something. I can give you part of me. And when I was drinking and before, I was always kind of giving myself away. And my mom used to tell me that you're always giving yourself away. And I didn't understand what she meant. Well, that too, Kelly. What my mother meant was that I was giving my spirit, I was giving my soul just to whoever would take it, and getting nothing in return except for emptiness. Here, if I give you some of my soul, I get back 100 times what I've given. It's a wonderful thing. I love being of service. I love working with other women in this program because it just fills me up and it keeps me going. What I am most focused on now in my sobriety is just healing. Healing my body, healing my spirit, and helping other people to heal. I was always taught to believe in miracles. And I guess for a while I did. And I know some of us say, you know, we are miracles, but I don't really believe that we are, because we all have God within us, and we all have this ability to be whole within us. So there's really nothing miraculous about doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to be in tune with this higher power. When I'm in tune with the higher power, I'm healthy and I'm whole and I'm happy, and that's what I was designed to do, and that's what the steps bring me to, is this spiritual awakening, this psychic change, this wholeness and health and healing. So it's just the way things are supposed to be. And I'm finding that, you know, all disease, any disease that I face or that anyone faces, it's all spiritual in nature. You know, if I find a way to fix the spirit, I'll find a way to fix the body, find a way to fix the mind. In the book, it tells us, you know, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And, you know, we don't have any monopoly on that. Everybody can benefit from it. I think that's why our steps are so widely used by so many different people with so many different problems, because it's all the same spiritual disease. We have to be able to identify with each other. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous stays strong and stays Alcoholics Anonymous because we're alcoholics and we identify. But this program can work miracles, can work wonders for anyone. I love the laughter. I love the laughter in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's so wonderful. It's just incredible to me to stand up here and look at all of you. To know that some of you might be brand new, and you might be wondering if you fit in, wondering if you belong. And if you're here, you probably do. You don't have to live the way you've been living, and you don't have to feel the way you've been feeling anymore. There's proof of it in this room. There's so many of us that have gotten a hold of this thing, and it's absolutely changed our lives. We go from being so full of fear and resentment, anguish, to being able to do what it says in the book in the fourth step. And when we disregard the other person and we look for our own mistakes, and we have that mental change of, instead of, what, you know, look what you've done to me, to how can I be of service to you? How can I be of help to you? What would God have me do to help you? That's a an incredible change. And it means everything. I really feel like I'm kind of struggling for words, and when if I get to that point, I should probably not try. I do want to thank all of you for allowing me to be here tonight and just letting me be up here and be happy. I am just completely happy when I get to let you see me, because you just fill me up. You do. You make me feel all warm and cozy, and that's a good thing. So thank you, and that's all.